Before we get into today's show, quick heads up, it contains descriptions of domestic violence.
So Christy's on the floor, bleeding out. She hears her lung gurgling. Her calf has been severed from her leg, practically, and she's fully expecting she's gonna die. And then she hears the shower turn on, and she realizes that the man who tried to kill her is gonna be busy for 20 minutes. And in that moment, she says to herself, I wanna live. I'm not gonna die on this floor. And somehow, miraculously, she gets up, drags herself out of the house, down the driveway, and flags down the first car she can find.
Christy Martin was a trailblazing boxer, often considered the first ever female star in the sport.
Christy Martin unleashes a furious assault.
But behind that success, she struggled for control of her career and her life, and it nearly killed her. Today, Allison Glock joins the show to tell the story of a woman who's a true fighter in more ways than one. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Friday, July 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Allison, in June, for the first time ever, the International Boxing Hall of Fame was planning to induct its first batch of female boxers, but like so many other things these days, those plans were postponed until next year. But when the inductees were first announced in December, it was seemingly unsurprising that former world champion Christy Martin would be part of the inaugural women's class. Tell us why that's not surprising.
It's not surprising because she's the best women's boxer of all time.
Allison Glock is a senior writer for ESPN and the author of the article, The Remarkable Life and Near Death of Boxer Christy Martin.
When she came on the scene in the 90s, she opened up what women's fighting and boxing could look like. She was aggressive and fearless.
And a lead right followed by a left by Christy Martin, thumping shots.
And she trash talked a lot.
I did buy an extra pair of running shoes because I figure I'm going to need them chasing your ass down.
And she really shocked people with her abilities. She just overperformed in every single matchup.
Landing with some ferocious shots. Christy Martin, nonstop, relentless attack.
In 1996, she fought against Deidre Gogarty on the Tyson card in Vegas on pay-per-view, and it became this giant sensation.
And the crowd here at the MGM Grand appreciated the efforts of both Christy Martin and Deidre Gogarty.
And then after that, she landed the cover of Sports Illustrated and was on talk shows. And so she was really our first celebrity, you know, women's boxer.
You spend a lot of time with Christy now. What is she like?
Christy is brassy and chippy. Hi, Christy.
Hey, Allison. How are you?
I'm good. It's nice to see you.
It's great to see you. You know, I'm always happy every day I wake up. I'm blessed.
She's this really particular combination of qualities that is very much a part of Appalachia. And being from Appalachia myself, I caught into that really quickly. I really enjoy and like her company.
If somebody wants to get into that verbal sparring match with me, they're going to lose. I have all kinds of great one-liners. And I grew up with Don King.
How did she get into boxing in the first place?
She entered a Tough Man contest. I don't know if you remember those, but they were sort of like people would erect cages, basically, with fencing, and then throw two people in a ring and have at it. It sort of predated MMA. And she was fascinated by that.
I grew up in Southern West Virginia, and at the time, the Tough Man contest would come around to my little town, and I would tell the promoters, I'm like, you have to let women enter this sometime. Why? I thought that. I have no idea, but I did.
And initially, they wanted her to sort of be chum for more established fighters. And so, you know, they brought her on to lose, basically. And then she just kept winning.
My conditioning was much better. You know, they were tough for the first 20 seconds. And then my athleticism and conditioning kind of took over.
How does a girl from West Virginia go from tough man competitions to sharing a stage with Tyson?
I think the Christy Martin story is really one of people not having expectations around what a woman could do, what a woman from Appalachia could do, and her obliterating those expectations at every single turn. A lot of promoters took note, eventually Don King, and she was the first woman signed by Don King.
Oh, so I imagine that changed her life.
It did change her life. The undercard of that Tyson fight became the stuff of, like, legend. What stands out about that pivotal night for you?
That night was awesome. There's more people in my dressing room than there were in my hometown.
Ladies and gentlemen, recognized as the women's pound-for-pound champion, introducing the coal miner's daughter, Christy Martin.
You go out there, the arena's going nuts because everybody's getting warmed up for Tyson. But the fight itself was a war.
As she fights back, look at this, combination.
Christy got hit with a real good left hook.
Look out, Christy Martin in trouble, but she battles back. And they go toe-to-toe.
Christy's got a lot of heart, but I'll tell you what, Christy ran into a hell of a combination, a terrific left hook counter by Gogarty, and this is an even fight right here, every inch of the way.
I mean, Deidre Gogarty was tough as hell and just kept coming.
Back comes Gogarty, unloading on Christy Martin. Martin swinging wildly. Gogarty landing with a right, a straight right hand. Here comes Martin turning it up. Oh, down goes Gogarty.
I knocked her down. She got up and fought harder.
Another furious exchange here. Carlos Padilla taking a close look at Deidre Gogarty as Christy Martin unloads the bombs.
She pushed me to my limits, I think, that night.
I wonder if they underestimated the talents and the toughness of Deidre Gogarty.
Her nose was split open and there was blood everywhere.
The only thing that will stop her is the bell.
We have a unanimous decision. The winner, the coal miner's daughter, Christy Martin.
Later, after the fight, I went back to my room and the voicemail was full. And it was full from the Leno show, Today show, all these really cool things. And I called my PR guy and I'm like, why would somebody play this joke on me? And Seth was like, Christy, it's not a joke. You should be down here in the hotel. Everybody's talking about your fight. And I was like, wow. You know, I didn't know where to put it, how to put it, how to even comprehend what was happening.
Christy Martin, a combination at the bell, and pain is staggered. Kenny Bayless waves it off. It's over.
So she was a famous champion, victorious, aggressive in the ring. But Allison, her personal life was very different. Because amidst all of that success, she was married to a man named Jim Martin, who was also her trainer. He was a lot older than her, and she met him in the first boxing gym she walked into. So tell us, who was Jim Martin, and how did he become this pivotal person in her life?
Jim Martin was sort of a grifter and a con man who inhabited this, you know, the sort of the fringes of the boxing world.
The first day that I met him, the minute I walked in, you could tell, like, Jim Martin was the biggest male chauvinist pig. And he got to the point, if he didn't put pig behind it, he was insulted. He didn't hide it that he really didn't want me in the gym.
But Christy, walking in to his life is probably like the best thing that ever happened to him, because she was a winner with a future. And as soon as he figured that out, he latched himself to her, you know, with a sort of vice grip. He started as her trainer and then manager, and then eventually they got married. Christy decided to marry Jim because she felt like she had to. Her first love in high school was a girl on her basketball team. They had this beautiful teen romance. But Christy knew that that was not acceptable in Appalachia. It was not acceptable at that time. It was not acceptable in her family. So she just made a decision to be with him. That sort of internal shame and fear to a guy who's incredibly manipulative and skilled at making people feel vulnerable became this very toxic combination.
In what ways did he try to control her life?
He would control every small detail, from like what she could eat, what she wore, who her friends were. He used to make her weigh herself in front of him 3 times a day. Everything from the smallest thing, like how many eggs for breakfast, to the, you know, largest thing, you know, how many times she could talk to her mother on the phone. He was this master manipulator.
Allison, how bad did it get?
It got about as bad as you can imagine.
The more successful I became with the boxing, the tighter his grip got.
You know, at some point, he began secretly recording her.
You know, he had these sex tapes, and that some of that shame on me. I knew some of them were being recorded. There was a lot of stuff I didn't know was being recorded.
Whenever Christy would threaten to leave or would start to express some independence, Jim threatened to show said tapes to her mother or her father or her peers.
Allison, it wasn't just these tapes that he used against her, right?
No, it was more than that. Jim was aware that Christy had female lovers in the past and remained attracted to women. And at this time in our culture, being a lesbian or bisexual would have ended her career.
He would tell me that he would tell everybody I was a lesbian. He had convinced me that my family was against me, you know, that I didn't have any friends. He had isolated me so much that my group was very small. My circle was very small. I would refer to him as the puppet master, and he thought that was the greatest compliment ever. And that's what he was. I mean, he was the puppet master. My mouth moved and his words came out.
At this point, she's stuck in this marriage with a man who wants to reveal her secrets. He's been taping her. He's abusive. How is she coping with all of that?
Initially, Christy coped by throwing herself into her sport. You know, she'll say boxing is the one true love of her life. And then when that stopped working, you know, when that wasn't getting the job done for, you know, avoiding the harsh realities of her existence, she started using cocaine. And then eventually, as it always is, that stops working. She was heading down this path to a reckoning. And it just ended up unfolding in this incredibly violent and dramatic way.
All right, after the break, let's talk about that reckoning and what happened between Christy and Jim.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So Allison, about a decade ago, Christy was stuck in a marriage she didn't want to be in, fearing for her life, her future. When and how did she come to decide to take control of her situation?
She reconnected with the girl her high school crush via Facebook. And they started talking and reminiscing. And after a few months of that, they decided to meet in person for lunch in 2010. So they did. And it was this like awakening. It was a reminder of Christy's value outside of her marriage, outside of boxing even. Then reconnecting with her gave her, you know, the strength she needed to make a change. She contacted a divorce attorney. She started to set things in motion. And she was very forthright with Jim about this whole process. And supposedly, he was fine with that. And they set up this idea, this plan, where she would fight one more big fight, one more big payday. They would split the winnings, and then they would go their separate ways. And then when Christy actually did start to go a separate way, Jim told her that he was going to kill her.
As I walked out the door, he said, "If you leave me, I'll kill you." And I turned around and I looked at him. I mean, I locked eyes with him because I was ready to die. I didn't care. I was so low, it didn't matter to me. I locked eyes with him and I said simply, "Do what you have to do, Jim," and left.
Where was she going? What was her plan?
Christy had gone to visit her friend, and she arrived and met her in the parking lot, and they hugged hello. She got a text immediately, and it was Jim. He had followed her and was stalking her. And he said, "I'm so close I could touch you." This sent a chill down Christy's spine. After a few hours of sort of being fearful of this, Christy just decided, "I'm not going to live this way. I'm not going to be threatened and intimidated anymore." And so she told her friend, "I'm going back. I'm going to go home and I'm going to deal with this head on."
I just didn't want to look over my shoulder for the rest of my life. And had I not gone back and faced whatever it was that was going to happen, I would have had to look over my shoulder for the rest of my life, just waiting on him to kill me. And I just didn't want to live like that.
She knew she was walking into the lion's den, basically, and she knew the outcome could be tragic, but she drove home and walked through that door.
And what happened when she came home?
Jim was there, and he was just acting peculiar, which wasn't unusual. And Christy said, "I'm going to go for a run." So she went in her bedroom and was lacing up her sneakers to go for a run. She got one sneaker on. And Jim entered the room, sort of hiding something behind his back. And he said, "You know, I have something to show you." And by the time she looked up at him, he had already stabbed her 3 times. And then a 4th time, he punctured her breast. And that was the moment she realized what was happening.
He was beating my head against the dresser in the bedroom. And it was like, boom, you know, the switch just flipped. And I told him, "Motherfucker, you cannot kill me." And I meant it. I mean, he would have had to have, you know, shot me point blank directly in the head to kill me. I was just, I had a strong mindset that I'm going to live through whatever it is you're going to dish out. And it just, from being so ready to die to, no, not today. Not today.
How did she survive?
Girl, I don't know. When you see the photos of the crime scene, when you read the police reports, her survival, I mean, it's just truly remarkable. Because in addition to stabbing her, he cut her calf almost completely off. He punched her in the face. And then he took a gun out and shot her in the chest at point blank range, and it missed her heart by, I think, under 3 inches.
When I was laying there on the floor, I prayed and I prayed hard. And it was like an immediate prayer answered. almost immediately, I heard the shower water turn on. And I thought, that's God's answer, and this is your time. This is the only chance you're gonna have to get out.
She dragged herself, like literally dragged herself from the house down this long driveway lined with trees and flagged down the first car she could.
I was sitting there, all bloody. My only choice was to go to the middle of the main highway and carjack somebody. I laugh and say carjack somebody.
And thankfully, mercifully, there was a car there and this stranger let her hop in and took her to the ER.
I told him that Jim had shot me and stabbed me. Please don't let me die. And then I apologized to him for bleeding all over his back seat. I just kept telling him, please don't let me die. Please don't let me die.
She didn't know this at the time, but Jim emerged from the shower while all this was happening, saw that she was gone, and he was probably only a few minutes behind her, running out to the driveway, chasing after her.
Jeez.
To get up off the floor, I think that showed more character, more guts than anything I ever did in boxing or anything I could have done before or I will do after in my life, because I could have easily laid there and died. I was dying. He had ruptured my lung and, I could hear the gurgling sound. So, it's a matter of time. It was numbered.
What were her injuries like and how long did it take her to recover when she got to the hospital?
Everyone who saw her in the hospital described the scene as one of the most graphic and horrific things they'd ever seen. It took quite a while to get her stabilized. It took months and months to recover. I mean, she still has scars and injuries and she's forever changed.
What happened to him?
He fled the scene and hid in the neighbor's shed for about a week. He was found by police, arrested, and tried and convicted, and he's in prison now.
Christy played a role in Jim being served justice. What was that like for her?
I think it was really difficult because, here was a woman who had kept her private life as private as she could, and suddenly she's in this courtroom, and her father's there, and her mother's there, and she's having to talk about all of the unsavory things that nobody really relishes unpacking. After she had testified and answered questions for hours and hours and hours, she was walking out of the courtroom, and normally, you go through the little between the tables.
I just took a deep breath, and I just walked straight at Jim. A million things are going through my mind. And I just said to him, look straight in his eyes and said, I hope you burn in hell, motherfucker.
It wasn't something, she had planned, but it did inspire her legal team to make coffee mugs with that quote on it.
I kind of want one.
I know. I do too. I have asked for one.
After she recovered, how did she go about trying to move on?
It was hard because he had dictated every single part of her life for so long that she really had to discover who she was.
I'm still every day trying to get over the mental, the beat down, the put downs, the you're not good enough. I still have those problems.
It took some time to find herself. She got into therapy. She started exercising again. She's doing boxing promoting to keep herself in the game she loves so much. And she's doing a lot of advocacy for survivors of domestic abuse and paying it forward.
I had a young girl, she was doing her senior exit project at the high school I was teaching at. She wanted to do it on domestic violence. The first thing she asked me was, how does being a victim of domestic violence, how has it changed your life? And it took me back. I'm like, what is it that bothered me so much? And I said to her, I'm not a victim. I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor.
Despite some initial hesitancy to get into a serious relationship, she ended up getting remarried. Was it hard for you to be vulnerable with someone new?
Oh, Allison, I told everybody that knew me, if ever I tell you that I'm serious about somebody, smack the crap out of me. No, 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 never, never again. I will not get married. I will not even be in a relationship.
So she got over her fears and fell in love with one of her former competitors, Lisa Holowin. And the two of them live in Texas. They're super compatible and super happy. And to me, it's just a lovely thing to see a woman of Christy's age and experience finally get to be who she should have been all along. What would you tell your younger self, that girl in West Virginia who loves sports, about what her future was going to bring?
Well, I mean, I don't know how I could even tell anyone to get them prepared for what my future was going to hold, because I truly lived more than two lives, because I lived the life in front of the camera and I lived the life behind the camera. But all along, I knew that in my true heart, I wanted to be with someone I loved. 40 years later, so much has changed, but so much is still the same, because there's still parents and people that are non-accepting. Would you rather your child be in a marriage where they're getting beat up, whether it be physical or mentally or emotionally, every day? So I would just tell anybody, wherever they may be yourself.
Thanks so much, Allison.
Of course, it was my pleasure.
Coming up, two new teams have new names with mixed reactions.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. The Washington football team announced its new name, or at least its temporary one, and are you ready for this? It's the Washington football team. The revelation was somewhat underwhelming, especially given that it came minutes after the Seattle NHL team announced their new name. Drumroll, please. The Kraken, which is a little more exciting than calling your football team the football team. So the name in Seattle has been the subject of speculation ever since the city was awarded its expansion team back in 2018. According to our Emily Kaplan, the organization actually registered five domain names: Kraken Hockey, Sockeyes Hockey, Evergreen Hockey, Renegades, and SeattleRenegades.com to throw people off the scent. So how did they land on Kraken, and what is a Kraken? Our Kraken? According to the team, it's a legendary sea creature with ties to the region on account of Seattle's deep maritime history. There's no mascot yet, but the primary logo sort of looks like a dragon with a glowing red eye. Now, the origin story of the name is unclear. According to Kaplan, at some point in 2018, the phrase "release the Kraken" was written on a post-it note inside NHL Seattle's offices, and the name was largely agreed upon by December 2019. Still early, but based on my very Seattle sports-centric social media timeline, people seem to like it. It's fun to say, get Kraken, the colors have a very Northwest feel, and at a moment when just about every MLS team seems to be named Insert City FC, it stands out. So take note, Washington, you can get a little weird, or at least come up with a name that's not just football team. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Tro, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Max Brodsky, Russell Dinala, Garrett Lang, Troy Farkas, and Pablo Torre. I'll talk to you Monday.